Hello there, welcome to the teller. Actually, it's been, I have to admit, it's been too long. Sorry, I've missed you all. Moved house twice in 3 months. And then the server who hosts my podcasts, a server called Opinion, basically went offline. Didn't host it anymore, which meant that I had to jump host. And that took time as well, which kind of meant that I had to save all my podcasts, realign them to a new hosting network. The whole thing was awful. And as I say, added to that, the house moves and just general things going on. It's been an unbelievable few months. And it's not that I've not wanted to do a podcast. I mean, I've been, obviously, I like doing them. I like doing the stories, but my mind hasn't been focused on it terribly well. And then added to that, some nonsense that somebody decided to have a go at me about, which distracted me as well. Honestly, I have to say, nothing to do with telling a story particularly, but I have to say, you do wonder sometimes, don't you, about people and what small lives they must lead. That they suddenly think that something is worth complaining about. And you think, hang on a minute, what's going on here? Get a life, please. Me, live and let live. And if I... if I've let you down by not doing a podcast for a couple of months, I'm sorry about it. But there we go. It's funny because I was looking at the podcasts, generally looking over them again, and which ones I liked and which ones perhaps I was a little bit more cautious on. And I'm still pretty happy with my podcasts. The only one that I still have reservations about, and I almost didn't put it up again, was The Cap of Invisibility, which I don't think works terribly well. I don't know. It doesn't do it for me, shall we say. It doesn't really connect. And I got the chance to listen to them again. My own favourite remains, I think, The Old Giant with No Heart. I continue to really like that one. It's got a lot going for it, hasn't it? It's just such a nice story. And of course, the first one, The ring, the finger and the ring, the old lady and the salesman. That remains a bit of a favourite of mine as well. We're approaching Christmas, because I'm doing this at the back end of November 2017. And I will work on getting something up and running as well as a special Christmas one. That will happen. But of course, you want to hear me telling a story. You don't particularly want to hear me groaning on about things that have been happening. So, the story today, it's more a children's one. The little bit of feedback that I do get is that people do rather like the children's stories. It's called Forget-Me-Nuts. And fairy tale-like, we begin a long, long, long time ago. In a land that was far and distant, where there lived a king who had a bad conscience. But he didn't let this conscience trouble him, not one little bit, because in that land there also happened to grow a rare and extremely peculiar fruit. Oh yes. Now, this was known as the forget-me-nut. And whenever the king felt that something he'd done, or something perhaps he hadn't done, and he needed very quickly to forget about it, then really he'd just chew one of these nuts, and whatever it was that was worrying him would disappear, never to be remembered again. I'll give you an example. It's a cold winter's day, and the king's being carried home to his palace. And he's being carried in this specially heated chair. And what does he notice? He notices a poor man dressed in rags. And next to him is his wife and three small children. And they're all shivering under a wall. Ah, says the king. when he gets back to his palace. You know, maybe I should have done something about that. There's a lot of poor people and they've got nobody to live. And it's cold and the weather's bad and God, they could be dying. I suppose really I should maybe change one of my palaces into a home for them. Oh, but your majesty, said his chancellor. Why, you've only got 16 palaces. If you lost one of them, you'd have won less than the King of Switzerland. And that wouldn't do now, would it? No, that wouldn't do at all, replied the king. Why don't you go to bed and chew one of those delightful forget-me-nuts, said his chancellor. Yeah, sighed the king. Perhaps you're right. And he put himself to bed with a hot water bottle, chewed a forget-me-nut, and then forgot all about his poor family. Not his poor family, sorry. All about the poor family, who were freezing outside in the ice and snow. It is bad for them, isn't it? But of course, the poor man and his family outside, they definitely didn't have any forget-me-nuts to chew on. Because forget-me-nuts, they were worth a huge amount of money. Far too rare, far too expensive for the likes of them. And frankly, even if they found one, it really wouldn't have done them any good. Because you see, forget-me-nuts just help you forget your conscience. They can't really forget, make you forget that you're cold, that you're hungry, that you've got no home. And to tell you the truth, forget-me-nuts didn't really help the king that much either. Because even though he chewed at least one a day, sometimes two or three or four, he was always very miserable. Although he could perhaps never entirely work out why. Maybe so, said the king in the morning. Maybe if I just built another palace, then I'd have one more than the King of Switzerland, and would that make me happy? It would, said the Lord Chancellor. And I should make a little point here. The Lord Chancellor's brother was a builder. And as the builder, he got the money for building the palaces. So the king had yet another palace built, and it was opened with great celebrations, a few fireworks, a lavish feast that went on for a week. But then, just like all his other palaces, it stood there empty most of the year round. Let me take you back to that poor man. The poor man whose family the king had seen shivering in the middle of winter. Now he had a son, the son's name was Tim, and one day Tim said to his father, "You know, Dad, I can't bear to see you unhappy. I'm going to see the king, and I'm going to talk to him." But Tim's father exclaimed, "Look, what on earth can you do, Tim? You're very small." "You'll see," said Tim. And there and then he set off for the king's palace. When he reached the palace, this is the main palace, the one where the king's actually living in, he found the doors were shut tight around the freezing winter. And the walls, they were too high to climb. "What shall I do?" thought Tim to himself. "I'm not really going to get into that palace, let alone be able to talk to the king." But he just didn't give up. He sat on the stone outside the palace and he waited and he waited and he waited to see what would happen. And as he sat there, the sky grew dark and the world grew quiet, as if it was waiting to see what would happen as well. And then finally it started to snow. And the snow, it fell on Tim's head and his shoulders. But still he sat there, just waiting and watching the king's palace. After a while, Tim saw a face at one of the windows. And all the while the snow fell thicker and faster until it quite covered his head and his shoulders. Yet still he just sat and waited to see what would happen. Before long the window opened. And a boy stuck his head out and called to Tim, "Hey, aren't you cold?" Now Tim was really very used to being cold, so he really didn't think about it that much. But now he came to think about it, he realised that yes, he was cold. So cold, in fact, that he couldn't speak.
"You better come in and get warm," said the boy at the window. But Tim found he couldn't really speak and he couldn't really move. He was just frozen fast and completely covered in snow, like a snowman. So the boy climbed out of the window, brushed the snow off Tim and lifted him in through the window. To tell you the truth, Tim is extremely small and he's light. And he's never really had enough to eat all his life. It didn't take Tim that long to thaw out, and he explained what he was doing. "That's odd," replied the boy. "I was wondering what I could do to make my dad happier too." "And your dad is?"
"The king,"
said the boy.
"Your father's the king," said Tim. "But he's got everything he could ever want."
"Yeah, that's right," replied the prince. "But he's miserable from the morning till the night. I try to cheer him up, but he doesn't even seem to exist. I mean, he just sits and chews the forget-me-nuts."
When Tim heard this, he sat and he stared into the fire. How can we help make our fathers be happier?" he said. No sooner had he spoken these words than the most extraordinary thing happened. The fire began to move, and as the two boys watched, the red-hot coals turned over and over and around until they formed themselves into a face, and the face spoke and said, "The key of memory is the only thing that will bring your father's happiness, but beware, because it will bring sadness as well." "And where do we find the key of memory?" asked Tim.
"Go with your conscience," replied the fire.
"What?" said the prince.
"What?" said Tim. But the coals in the fire shifted around, and they didn't say another word. And then suddenly, there was a noise like thunder, and Tim and the prince rushed to the window and looked out into the freezing black light, and they could see two points of light coming towards them fast. "What do you think they are?" asked Tim.
"Perhaps they are consciences," said the prince.
"Don't be daft," said Tim.
As the two points of light got nearer and nearer, suddenly two huge black stallions, breathing fire out of their nostrils, burst out into the night. They leapt over the palace wall and they reared up to halt underneath the window. Now Tim looked at the prince and the prince looked at Tim and Tim shrugged and said, "Well, I don't know. Maybe you're right." And without another word, they leapt onto the backs of those stallions and galloped off into the night. The next morning, when King Yorick found that his son had vanished, he wrung his hands in despair. "What shall I do? My only son has run away. Maybe I should have loved him more. Maybe I should have been a better dad."
"Oh, don't make such a fuss," said his chancellor. "Chew a forget-me-nut and you'll soon feel better."
And the king ate a forget-me-nut, and after a while he forgot all about it. But when he went to bed that night, he found the queen crying into her pillow.
"What on earth's the matter with you?" he asked.
The queen looked at him in anger and exclaimed, "What? Have you already forgotten that our son has just run away?"
"Oh, don't make such a fuss," said the king. "Have a forget-me-nut." And he offered the bowl of nuts to the queen. But she seized it from his grasp and she threw the entire thing onto the fire.
"Don't," cried the king. "Why, those are worth their weight in gold."
But it was too late. The nuts burst into flame and the smoke went up the chimney. Meanwhile, Tim and the prince continued riding through the frozen wastes on the back of the fire-breathing stallions. By and by, they saw a cloud on the horizon, and the stallions redoubled their speed. And by, they reached the cloud and found that it was full of smoke. And under that, the stallions came to a halt. When Tim and the prince looked down, they saw they were on the edge of a sheer cliff, or a cliff that dropped straight down 1,000 feet into a lake of fire. But they didn't have time to be frightened, for to their horror, their stallions reared up and pawed the air,
and then leapt straight off the cliff and plunged down, down towards that fiery lake. The two boys shut their eyes, convinced their last moment had come. But as they reached the surface of the burning lake and they felt the fire licking up around their stallions' bellies, suddenly the flames seemed to separate and they found themselves plummeting down into the black hole until they disappeared beneath the surface of the fire of the lake of fire. For a moment, their eyes were filled with smoke and they couldn't see a thing. But when they opened them again, they found that they had landed in a vast cavern, and there in the centre of the cavern was a great forge with flames shooting up and feeding a fiery lake above. And the forge worked a huge blacksmith with iron bands on his arms and fire coming from his nostrils. The two stallions reared into the air once more, and Tim and the prince fell off onto a pile of straw. When he saw them, the huge blacksmith stopped his work and he laughed. And every time he laughed, the flame shot out of his nostrils and set fire to his beard. So he had to keep running to the water butt to put it out. Meanwhile, Tim got to his feet and said, "We have come for the key of memory."
"Have you now?" roared the blacksmith.
And this time he laughed so hard that he set fire to his hood and he had to plunge his whole head into the water butt. "We've been told it's the only thing that would bring our father's happiness," said the prince.
"And sadness," roared the blacksmith.
"Ha!" And he laughed again so long and loud that he set fire to his jerkin and he had to jump into the water butt right up to his neck. "Is the key of memory here?" said Tim. The blacksmith lay there half in the water and he roared, "I've finished making it, it's on the anvil." The two boys turned and saw a huge key lying on the anvil, glowing red hot. "Take a pair of tongs," said the blacksmith, "and drop it into the water butt." And the prince? He took a long pair of tongs, he lifted the red hot key and he dropped it into the water butt where the great blacksmith was still sitting. Immediately the blacksmith disappeared into a cloud of steam, and where the steam had cleared away, the blacksmith had gone, and there was an old woman whose face was red like the coals of a fire. And the old woman turned to the prince and said, "Prince, in the unhappiest part of your father's kingdom you will find a chest filled with your father's memories. This is the only key that will unlock it." And then the old woman just fell to pieces and sank like glowing embers down into the water butt. So Tim and the prince took the key, and they looked for their black stallions, but they had disappeared too. Said Tim, "it looks as if we've got to walk home." And the two boys searched until eventually they found an entrance to the cavern, and they climbed up and escaped, and when they reached the world above, they found that the lake of fire was just an ordinary lake. And there at the water's edge were two grey horses. Just ordinary horses. They rode back through the frozen Northlands. But what had taken a few minutes on the marvellous stallions now took days. And what had taken hours now took weeks. But eventually they did arrive back in the land of the king. "Where shall we find the unhappiest part of my father's kingdom?" asked the prince. "I know where it is," said Tim. But he led the prince to a place where 40 beggars slept under a bridge. But they couldn't find the chest there. And then Tim led the prince to a shed where 20 robbers were hiding for fear of being caught. But they didn't find the chest there. Finally, Tim led the prince to a place where his own mother and father and brother and sister were huddled around a poor fire beneath a wall. But when they saw Tim, their faces burst into smiles of happiness. And they didn't find the chest there. "Well, it beats me," said Tim. "I don't know where to look." So the prince returned to the palace and Tim went with him. And they found the king sitting under a nutmeg tree with tears in his eyes. The prince stood in front of his father and said, "What's the matter? You're the king. You've got 17 palaces and everything your heart could desire. Why are you unhappy? The king looked at his son without recognizing him and said, I forgot to love my son. And he ran away. And now I've forgotten what he looks like. At that moment, Tim noticed the king was actually sitting on a rusty old iron chest. And he handed the key to the prince, and the prince tried it in the lock. And it fitted exactly. Father, said the prince, I've come back in the hope to bring you happiness. With that, he unlocked the chest, and at once the lid flew open, and a million black thoughts flew into the air and blotted out even the sun for a moment. The king gave a roar of grief as the black cloud suddenly melted into his mind, and he looked into the prince's eyes and said, My son, I fear this is not happiness you've brought me. I now remember everybody who has gone hungry even for a day. I now remember every poor mother who can't feed her children. I now remember every poor father who can't clothe his family, who can't put a roof to keep the rain and the snow from their heads. I now remember everyone whose suffering I have ignored, and my heart is overcome by grief. But your majesty, cried Tim, why don't you give up just one of your 17 palaces to house the hungry? And the king looked at Tim, and for the first time in years, he smiled. I'll do better than that, he said. And then and there, King Yorick became the first king to give up living in a palace. Instead, he lived in a very comfortable mansion that was certainly big enough for him, his family, Tim, his mother, his father, his brother, his sister, and run the country. The king opened up every one of his palaces, so from that day on, there was not a single homeless person left in the kingdom. The Lord Chancellor, he left. He went off to work with the King of Switzerland, and so did his brother, the builder. And you know what? The king ordered his gardeners to cut down every one of the orchards and every one of the forget-me-not trees. And they did. And from that day on, we have all forgotten that there ever was such a thing as a forget-me-not tree. There we are. It was really nice to tell a story again. I haven't for a couple of months. In the last story that I did, before loads of things started to happen, I tried out a poem right at the end. And one or two of my listeners who I'm in touch with said to me, it's good to have a poem at the end. The poems, of course, are far more grown up. If that was a children's story, well, a mix of a children's story, I think grown-ups might like it as well. Not one of mine, have to say, not one of mine. Heard it at a storytelling festival. Not sure who did it. Might have been a Terry Jones, actually, I think, from memory. The poem, yeah, it was good to do a poem. I do write poetry. I don't often do it. My poems tend to be very grown up. But I'm happy to do one just to finish with today. This one's called Pointing the Finger. It's a sort of a montage of quotes and ideas. There's a quote from Elizabeth I that starts it off. So here we are, a little bit of poetry to finish with. Pointing the finger. Much accused of me, nothing proved can be, quoth Elizabeth, prisoner. Ha, but there's no smoke without fire. He that is without sin, cast the first stone, quoth Jesus. Who wrote on the ground with a stick. The prophet's tears. The sigh of Allah.
mixed in the ground. To accuse. To point the finger. To cause trouble. Or to bring down the damned. Who knows, eh?
Aha, so there we are. Lovely, lovely. I'll have another one story-wise before Christmas. I enjoy doing it. Sorry it's been so long. Goodbye, au revoir, God bless.